Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So I don't know about you all, but in my social circles, I heard no end of how crappy 2016 was and how anxious people are about the new political order. Now it's 2017 and time for resolutions, and the whole vibe of this moment has me thinking about action. So here's my question. What are you resolved to do to improve your community in 2017? Call in and let me know, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And let's be clear, I'm not asking about improving yourself, as important as that is. I know that's what most New Year's resolutions are typically about, giving up sugar or booze or calling your mother. But do those things, yes. But in this moment here, I want to hear about your contribution to community. However you define that, your family, your block, your city, your state, your nation, your identity group, whatever it is, what are you putting in this year? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And here with me on the phone is my friend and colleague, Mark Winston Griffith. Mark runs the Brooklyn Movement Center in Bed-Stuy and has spent the past, decades putting in for Central Brooklyn, from improving banking to food access to public safety. And I think you even ran for city council, Mark. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Great to be here with you, Kai.
Glad to have you. So it's 2017. You have kind of already done your part for community over these years, as I just got through ticking off. But still, as a model for listeners, what are you thinking about? What are you going to do to contribute to community in 2017?
Well, I think that what I'm thinking about is very similar to what you just said at the top of the hour, and what I think a lot of my colleagues are thinking. That is, you know, with the recent election, we have seen something that organizers actually look for, which is for their issues to be polarized, for there to be no doubt about what the stakes are, for things to be dramatized in such a way that their constituents, that the people they work with, understand what the challenges are. And so I think with this recent election, on so many different issue fronts, and I just think in the world of social justice in general, people now understand that the forces that they've been working against are lined up against them in a way that they've really never experienced in their lifetime. And so for me, as well as for other people, I think it's in some ways it's somewhat simple. It's a lot of the work that we do, if you've been committed to social justice, then a lot of the work that you do in some ways will remain the same. It's just going to be a lot harder. We're going to have to work harder. We're going to have to focus. And I think that more importantly, we're going to have to reach across lines, reach across issue lines and constituent lines. And, you know, when you work in the world of social justice and you're a nonprofit, you oftentimes get put in these very specific lanes, what people call silos. And so I think what we understand, and I think what a lot of my colleagues understand, is that we have to break free of those silos. We have to support one another across those different lanes, and just recommit ourselves to the work that we've been doing for all this time.
So I'm often asked, Mark, by people, you know, where do I start? So people who are not professional activists, professional organizers, people who haven't been engaged in community, however they define that, and they say, I'm no activist. Where do I begin? Right. Where do I actually start? How do you answer that question?
Well, I think you start with what you care about. There are issues, obviously, that hit you, that hit not only your self-interest, but the interest of your family, of the people around you, the things that you care about. So you start there and you identify what those issues are, and you think about also what you're good at, what's your skill set. And then you just try to line that up with things that currently exist. I would not suggest that people go out and start a new organization, right? I mean, as you said, if you're not an activist, if you don't do social justice in some ways professionally, there's no reason to start now. You can rest assured that whatever it is that you care about, there is an organization, whether it's local, whether it's statewide and regional, whether it's nation, this national, there is an organization that is doing that work. And so find out about that organization. You know, if they have a membership like ours, you can join the organization. And so in the case of an organization like ours that has a membership, you don't just become a supporter. You don't just become a spectator. You actually get involved in the day-to-day activities of the organization. You help to strategize. You put yourself on the front line, and you put yourself in communication and community with other people who feel like you. And you will realize that there will be no shortage of work to do, and that you will be called upon in short order, you know, probably before the week is out, to get involved in one way or another.
I want to go to Mitch in Brooklyn, who has been getting involved and has a unique way he's been doing it. He's been doing been taking something he's already doing and putting it to use as a sort of new organizer, right? Mitch, tell me about what you're doing.
Hey there, Kai. So I run a small press known as Inpatient, and it started off as kind of saying to publish my friends who are such great artists, and then eventually it became this bigger thing. And so we've always kind of been a soapbox, you know, for people who with unheard voices. And now I think we're trying to be more politically engaged and actionable than ever. Right after the election, we've actually been holding some events at this place called the Sunview LunchNet, which is in Greenpoint on Nassau Ave. And we've been raising money. We've been using it to, like, hold poetry readings and raise money for Planned Parenthood and Sister Song, which is an amazing reproductive justice organization. And so we're really just recommitting ourselves and to this resolve to find, you know, the kind of voice in the wilderness that's crying out in it. Yeah, platform.
I think I lost you there for a second, Mitch, but I apologize for that. So it was a poetry press in the first instance, correct?
Yes. Yeah. It began as a poetry press, and then as we built it up, we wanted to, you know, become more engaged and be less, you know, aesthetic and more just actionable, more politically involved. Work in March. There's this amazing writer, Heather Johnson, and she's writing a survival guide for being, you know, a queer youth of color in America. And I think that's just, it just blew me away when she read some poems at this event we held in November right after the election.
And how's that felt? How's that felt for you and the folks in the group? Has it been exhausting? Has it been innovating?
It's been exhausting in the way that it's the best. You know, when you're doing work and you feel tired, but you wake up and you have that resolve every morning. That's kind of, it's the exhaustion from actually working and doing something, you know. And and it can be overwhelming, but it really is a lot of fun. And you know, after the election, everyone was so dour. And I remember all the readers that we had booked for this reading. And they were all kind of down and like, should we even do this reading? Like, what does it mean to be doing poetry after Trump? And we all said, you know, we're going to do it. And we went there and it was just, you know, we had all the solidarity. It was so beautiful. And everyone cried together and read and laughed. And it was amazing. And it was like, this is why I do the press. And New Year's resolution is to do that more often.
You laugh, you cry, you change the world.
Yeah, I try.
Thank you, Mitch. Olivia in Brooklyn.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. How are you? What are you up to in 2017?
Okay, so my commitment for the past 3 years has been being a Girl Scout troop leader. I'm part of the Girl Scouts of Greater New York organization. And right after the elections, of course, I was devastated, but I decided to make my resolve and make a stronger commitment to continue volunteering and leading these girls and teaching them to be strong, powerful women. And that's my commitment to them. And I would say to anyone who's interested in volunteering for either as a Girl Scout troop leader, there's over, I think, 29,000 girls who are looking to join troops and get involved. And we have a shortage of leadership of people that volunteer their time to meet with these girls, whether it's going to be on a weekly basis or on a monthly basis, to teach them life skills and to do really cool and interesting stuff, you know, to bring them happiness.
And what was your first step, Olivia? How did you get started on this?
My first step was I'm a parent, so I have three little girls, and I wanted to have them join the Girl Scouts, and I found a troop out in Ditmas Park, Brooklyn. I was looking for diversity, and that's what I got for my girls. And the first step is going on the Girl Scout of Greater New York website, and it tells they have tabs for parents, for girls, and you can look into the organization and then decide to sign up. And then find the troop. There's different ways of joining. You don't have to do a weekly meeting. You can join and participate in events that they hold. And I think that's a great way to give back and to continue, giving back to the community.
Great. Thank you for that contribution, Olivia. I'm going to go to Martin in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Martin, what are you up to in 2017?
Hi. I'm an active member of the Unitarian Society in Ridgewood, but I've also been on a town committee for 7 years, and what I've come to understand, having moved to a town like Ridgewood, which has about 30,000 people, excellent schools and whatnot, is, and like a lot of places, that the market is basically gentrifying elders out of our community. Elders are being driven not only out of New York City, but also a lot of communities in New Jersey where the tax keep getting raised to pay for the schools. And so I'm specifically been advocating for over 55 housing, but I'm seeing a really, a really generalized problem in our generation, which is that a lot of people are part of the sandwich generation, but we in Ridgewood and a lot of towns, and even in the Upper West Side, we see way more strollers than wheelchairs. And I think that is a huge community issue that hasn't been addressed and that I'm really putting a lot of passion into.
Martin, I like that you're looking around at your community, what's happening literally around you, and trying to respond to that.
Well, and I think I hope that other people can look around their communities too, because it's not only where I live. The market is driving the aging industrial complex that shipped all our elders out to cornfields, Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you, Martin, for your contribution in 2017. I'm going to go to Amy in Madison, New Jersey. Amy.
Hi, Kai. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have three things, actually, that I'm going to be doing this year. The first is to give a small amount of money, $25 every month, to an organization that I know can assist our local communities. I'm most interested in food justice issues. I'm giving to an organization called Grow It Green and also America's Grower-O. Also homelessness, so I'll be giving a donation to Homeless Solutions and also the environment with the work that the Great Swamp Watershed Association has been doing. So I can give a small amount each month throughout the year. The second thing I'm doing is I'm putting up a note that I'm going to keep close by with the name of my representative, Rodney Frelinghuysen, and also the two senators, Cory Booker and Robert Menendez, and put their contact information up. So I'm able to, when I see something that I want to respond to or voice an opinion on, I'm able to do it. Because so many times I say, oh, I should write my senator, I should do that, and I don't have the contact information. And then the third thing is I work at Drew University, where I work with students who are called civic scholars, and they're students on scholarship who are committed to community. And they do about 100 hours of volunteer work every year in addition to other things. And so I'm going to be motivating them and encouraging them to affect change in their community and know that they can make a difference. So those are my three resolutions.
You've got a long list there, Amy. I love it. You're going to put your money where your mouth is, put your
yeah.
telephone where your mouth is. This is great.
It's small steps, taking small steps throughout the year, not one big thing, but it's hopefully going to affect our community, and I'll, do my very small part to help make a difference.
Thank you for that, Amy. Mark, small steps, particularly on financing. I like that Amy's talking about she's just going to put $25 a month into local nonprofits. I feel like a lot of us feel like, well, if I'm going to be a donor to something, I have to donate thousands of dollars. That's not true, right? Or is it true? I don't know. How do you feel about it, run
absolutely.
All of these organizations?
Giving money is donating, contributing is just one, is a very simple thing that everyone can do. And when I say everyone, I mean that even if you're on a very limited income, barely have any income, just sharing a tiny piece of that not only makes a big difference, but I think that many people are under illusion that it's foundations and big institutions that are keeping charities and advocacy groups and organizations like I was organizing, community organizing, social justice groups alive. But in fact, it's individuals who give the vast majority of those monies. Even when we talk about things like churches, you know, and you think of tithing, it's the work of the individual member of the congregation that is actually keeping that institution alive. And so I think that's a really strong lesson to take from this, that you may not think it's a lot, but whomever you're giving to will probably think differently about that. And if there are enough people like you who are giving a little bit, then you can keep an organization alive that way.
Yeah. I am Kai Wright. I'm an editor at The Nation magazine, sitting in for Brian Lehrer today. We're talking about your 2017 resolutions, not to improve yourself, that's important, but to improve your community. What are you going to put in? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let's go to Muriel in the Financial District. Hi, Muriel.
Hi. Thank you so much for letting me talk about this project. I make American flags that celebrate diversity, and I have since 2003 as a response to the flag being used as an instrument to promote war, which I feel as an immigrant, it's not about that. It's about e pluribus unum, about out of many one, coming together to create a beautiful country that works in unity. So I'm stepping it up. I'm making a 60-foot by 40-foot flag. I'm inviting people to send me cloth that represents their culture, whether it's from Uzbekistan or India or England, like me, to include in this mosaic of different people to open the conversation about what it means, what our motto means, which is on our money. It's an important motto. And I think we've gotten away from it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing.
It puts me in mind of the AIDS quilt, Muriel, and this the community effort to sort of stitch together a project that celebrated the lives of everybody that had passed with from HIV back in the day.
I think I'm inspired by that. Yeah, I feel that I don't want to say, you know, you're wrong about how you do this or that. What I want to do is take an art project and make it something that we can use as a conversation piece to talk about what we're doing that's right, how we are living together, how people love this country and why they or their family came here and what they're doing and what they brought from their country that is of great value to this culture. That's what the whole project is about. So if I might just say, my website is murielstockdale.com, and they can contact me if people want to participate in this project.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Muriel. Mark, Muriel, we had Mitch, my partner, are all artists who are looking for ways to show up with their art in some way. What role can artists play in community organizing and in over your years of doing this work?
Well, you just heard perfect examples of it. You know, being creative in general is a excellent way of supporting. That is, people, whether it's things that can be used to raise funds, whether the art in itself helps someone look at an issue in a fresh and different way, or just whether it's a matter of getting creative people and people who are not ordinarily as politically active, getting them involved and interwoven into the fabric of social justice work and of community change work, then in and of itself can make a profound impact. So, you know, when I was talking earlier about sort of crossing lines, that's exactly what needs to happen, because we oftentimes think of ourselves in these very specific ways. We have these identities, whether we be artists, whether we work on Wall Street, you know, whether we're advocates. And what I think this what this moment does is give us an opportunity to think of how we can leverage what we have, you know, and our creativity and our talents, and put that to use to leverage them for a bigger cause than ourselves.
Let's go to Bob in Yonkers, New York. Hello, Bob.
Good morning. I'm a volunteer with a bunch of high school students in a school here in Yonkers. Most of the kids in the class are undocumented, I would suspect. And I want them to be aware of globalization and geography. And, you know, globalization is a 13-letter word, but the middle letter, the seventh letter, is the letter I. And I want them to know that they, although they're in the middle of this word, they and people like them are what makes this world go round. So one of the things I have the kids do is write down on a list all the clothing they make and where it's made, and then go to the map and find out where it comes from. Because what I say to them, globalization is like a foreign term, yet it's closer to them than if they were in that country, because it is literally on their body. It's the shoes, it's the underwear, it's the shirts they wear, and where they're made. And then to have the kids go to a map of the world and find out where their descendants came from. And just last week, I had 10 kids in a room. One child knew where his grandparents came from. It was Laos. I had kids in a room from South America, Honduras, Guatemala. They weren't even sure where South America was on the map. So my goal this year is to make kids aware of where they are in this world relative to the rest of the world. I tell them that of the 20 people in this world who are living today, only one lives in the United States. And yet we have a tendency to think that the world revolves around us. And to some extent it does. But for them to realize they're just part of a much greater, large world where everybody is like them. They breed, they get hungry, they get tired. But because we're so lucky in this country, we take it for granted.
There is an I in globalization. I like that, Bob. Remind me, how old are the kids you're working with?
The ones I'm working with are 16, 17, are high school seniors and juniors.
Got it.
Well, thank you for that input in 2017, Bob. Let's go to Sam in Brooklyn. Sam.
Hi. So I'm also working with kids, but in a slightly younger age group. I'm working with my daughter's preschool in Brooklyn in Fort Greene, Clinton Hill. It's called Bija. And we're doing two different things. The first is that we've been holding a drive for Syrian refugee families that are being relocated in the state. We've had our kids, who are all under 4 years old, go out and purchase new toys and also go through their own books and toys to collect things for kids that are arriving in our country with nothing. And then the second part of what we've been doing with her school is through a nonprofit called the Bija Fund, which is raising money for kids in our neighborhood that couldn't afford the awesome, progressive Brooklyn preschool that, you know, our kids are fortunate enough to go to, and we're raising money so that they can get free or low-cost tuition. Because I really just feel like, you know, starting social action when you're as small as possible is what helped inspire me now as a 35-year-old woman to be out doing things, and, you know, is a good example that my parents set and that I want to pass on to my kids.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sam, for that contribution. Mark, let's finish up with talking about some of the challenges that we have here when you want to go show up. One of them is, I guess, burning out, right? You know, I mean, I talked about at the beginning of this segment that I know so many people who have been complaining about how they have felt at the end of 2016. But I also know a lot of people who have raced into the gap and started getting to work and may already be getting tired. How do you deal with balance and engaging in a way that doesn't burn you out?
Well, it's a really good question. And at the end of last year, after the elections, you saw that people had sort of taken, many people had taken a really deep and profound body blow, and we're demoralized. And I think we're left a little, not only confused, but just really exhausted, because, you know, as we know, the political season was not only exhausting physically, but just mentally and spiritually. I mean, it was overwhelming. And so I think one thing you have to do is just give people a moment to rest and to restore themselves and to heal. And so much of the work that we do is focused on that, understanding that you can't always sort of, you know, externalize your energy. You have to maintain, there has to be a certain level of self-care that you as a person does, but that you have to model for an entire community. And so we have done a lot of that. And at the end of last year, after the election, we held a big sort of event where we just fed people and we talked. And there was a little bit of strategy going on. But the whole idea was just to be in community with other people. You know, there was some Reiki that we did, some dance healing. And so that you have to weave into the work. But I will tell you right now that come in, you know, now we're in January, people are ready to go. And that's the energy. I think that, you know, having come off the holidays, people have done that they've rested and they've meditated on this, and now I think people are ready to go in 2017.
Mark Winston Griffith of the Brooklyn Movement Center, thanks for helping us talk this through.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
And let me wrap up with my own resolution. I'm going to show up for affordable housing in my neighborhood. That's important to me. I'm going to get the nerve up to help organize a block association. And I am, in fact, going to call my mom more. So, up next, I'll speak with Omar Saif Gobash. Omar Saif Gobash, the ambassador of the United Arab Emirates to Russia. He's got a new book of personal essays. Stay tuned.